This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Broken Prince, Book 2 of The Royals, written by Aaron Watt, performed by Zachary Weber and Angela Goethals. Chapter 1. Reed. The house is dark and silent when I let myself in through the mudroom off the kitchen. Nearly 10,000 square feet and no one is here. A grin splits my face. With my brothers scattered, the housekeeper gone, and my dad off who knows where, that means my girl and I have the royal mansion all to ourselves. Hell yeah. I break into a light jog as I cross the kitchen and climb the back stairs. Hopefully Ella is waiting for me upstairs in her bed, looking all cute and sexy in one of my old t-shirts she's taken to sleeping in. It would be even better if that was all she was wearing. I speed up, bypassing my room, Easton's and Gid's old room, until I'm outside Ella's door, which is disappointingly closed. A quick knock gets me no response. Frowning, I fish my phone out of my back pocket and shoot off a quick text. "Where are you, babe?" She doesn't answer. I tap my phone against my leg. She's probably out with her friend Valerie tonight, which is kind of good, actually, because I could use a shower before I see her. The boys were smoking a shit ton of weed over at Wade's place tonight, and I don't want to stink up Ella's room. New plan. Shower, shave, and then hunt my girl down. I pull off my t-shirt, wad it up in my hand, and shove open my bedroom door without bothering to turn on the light. I kick off my shoes and cross the carpet to my attached bath. I smell her before I see her. What the? With the sickening scent of roses clinging to my nostrils, I swing toward the bed. No way. I growl when I make out the shadowy figure on the mattress. As a jolt of annoyance rips up my spine, I march back to the doorway and flick the light switch. Then I instantly regret it because the pale yellow glow that fills the room reveals the naked curves of a woman I want nothing to do with. "What the hell are you doing here?" I snap at my father's ex-girlfriend. Brooke Davidson offers a coy smile.
"I've missed you."
My jaw falls open. Is she fucking serious right now? I quickly swing my head out in the hall to make sure Ella's still gone. Then I head straight for the bed. "Get out," I growl, grabbing one of her wrists to pull her off my bed. Shit, now I'm going to have to change the sheets, because if there's anything that stinks worse than old beer and weed, it's Brooke Davidson.
"Why? You never complained before."
She licks her red lips in a way that I'm sure is supposed to look sexy, but that I find stomach-turning. There's a lot of skeletons in my past that Ella doesn't know about, a lot that would make her downright sick, and the woman in front of me is one of them. "I distinctly remember telling you that I never wanted to touch your skank ass again." Brooke's smug smile turns thin.
"And I told you not to talk to me like that."
"I'll talk to you however I want," I spit out. I cast another glance at the door. Desperation is starting to make me sweat. Brooke can't be here when Ella comes home. How the hell would I begin to explain this? My eyes fall on Brooke's clothes strewn across my floor. The skimpy mini-dress, the lacy underwear, a pair of stilettos. My shoes happen to land by hers. This all looks like a hot mess. I grab Brooke's heels off the floor and toss them at the bed. "Whatever you're selling, I'm not buying. Get the fuck out." She throws the shoes back. One of the heels scratches my bare chest before they fall to the floor.
"Make me."
I squeeze the back of my neck. Short of forcibly picking her up and tossing her out, I'm not sure what my options are. What the hell would I say now if Ella caught me hauling Brooke out of my bedroom? "Hey, baby, don't mind me. I'm taking out the trash. See, I slept with my dad's girlfriend a couple times, and now that they've broken up, I think she wants back in my pants. That's not sick or anything, right?" Cue awkward chuckle. I clench my fist to my side. Gideon always told me I was self-destructive, but man, this is self-destruction on a whole new level. I did this. I let my anger toward my father drive me into bed with this bitch. I told myself that after what he did to Mom, he deserved to have me screw his girlfriend behind his back. Well, the joke's on me. "Get your clothes on," I hiss out. "This conversation is over." I halt at the sound of footsteps in the hall. I hear my name called. Brooke's head tilts. She hears it too. Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck. Ella's voice is right outside my door.
"Oh, goody, Ella's home,"
Brooke says as my blood pumps unsteadily in my ears.
"I have some news I can share with both of you."
It's probably the dumbest thing I could ever do, but the only thought running through my mind is fix this. I need this woman gone. So I drop everything and charge forward. I grab Brooke's arm to haul her off the mattress, but the bitch yanks me down. I try to avoid making contact with her naked body, but end up losing my balance. She takes advantage and pushes herself up against my back. A soft laugh puffs in my ear as her store-bought tits burn against my skin. I watch in panic as the doorknob turns. Brooke whispers, "I'm pregnant and the baby is yours." "What?" My entire world lurches to a stop. The door swings open. Ella's gorgeous face takes in mine. I watch her expression turn from joy to shock.
"Reed?"
I'm frozen in place, but my brain is working overtime, frantically trying to calculate the last time Brooke and I were together. It was St. Patty's Day. Gid and I were hanging out by the pool. He got drunk. I got drunk. He was beyond upset about something. Dad, Sav, Dinah, Steve. I don't understand it all. I vaguely register the sound of Brooke giggling. I see Ella's face, but I'm not really seeing it. I should say something, but I don't. I'm busy. Busy panicking. Busy thinking. St. Patty's Day. I'd stumbled upstairs and crashed and woke up to wet, hot suction around my dick. I knew it wasn't Abby because I'd already broken it off with her, and she wasn't the type to creep into my bedroom anyway. And who am I to turn away a free BJ? Ella's mouth falls open, and she says something. I can't hear it. I'm caught in a tailspin of guilt and self-loathing, and I can't pull myself out of it. All I can do is stare at her. My girl. The most beautiful girl I've ever seen. I can't turn away from all that golden hair, those big blue eyes pleading at me to explain myself. "Say something," I order my uncooperative vocal cords. My lips won't move. I feel a cold touch against my neck and flinch. "Say something, damn it, don't let her walk away." Too late. Ella flies out the door. The loud slamming snaps me out of it, sort of. I still can't move. I can barely breathe. St. Patty's Day. That was more than 6 months ago. I don't know much about pregnant women, but Brooke's barely got anything going on. There's no way. No way. No way that baby is mine. I shoot off the bed, ignoring the wild trembling of my hands as I lunge for the door.
"Really?" comes Brooke's amused voice. "You're going after her? How will you explain this to her, sweetie?"
I spin around in fury. "Swear to God, woman, if you don't get the hell out of my room, I'm throwing you out." Dad has always said that a man who raises a hand against a female lowers himself beneath her feet. So I've never hit a woman. Never had the urge to until I met Brooke Davidson. She ignores the threat, continues to taunt me, spelling out all my fears.
"What lies will you tell her? That you never touched me? That you never wanted me? How do you think that girl will respond when she finds out you screwed your daddy's girlfriend? Do you think she'll still want you?"
I glance toward the now empty doorway. I can hear muffled sounds coming from Ella's bedroom. I want to sprint across the hall, but I can't. Not when Brooke is still in this house. What if she runs out there butt-ass naked saying that she's pregnant with my kid? How do I explain that to Ella? How do I get her to believe me? Brooke needs to be gone before I face Ella. "Get out!" I turn all my frustrations on Brooke.
"Don't you want to know the sex of the baby first?"
"No, I don't." I take in her slender, naked body and see a slight mound on her belly. Bile fills my mouth. Brooke's not the type to get fat. Her looks are her only weapon, so the bitch isn't lying about being pregnant. But that kid isn't mine. It might be my dad's, but it sure as hell is not mine. I wrench the door open and run out. "Ella!" I call. I don't know what I'll say to her, but it's better than saying nothing. I'm still cursing myself for freezing up like that. God, what a fuck-up I am. I skid to a stop outside her bedroom door. A quick survey nets me nothing. Then I hear it, the low, throaty sound of a sports car engine being revved. With a burst of panic, I sprint down the front stairs, while Brooke cackles behind me like a witch on Halloween. I lunge at the front door, forgetting it's locked, and by the time I get it open, there's no sign of Ella outside. She must have sped down the driveway going at mock speeds. Shit. The stones under my feet remind me I'm wearing jeans and nothing else. Spinning on my heel, I take the stairs three at a time, only to grind to halt when Brooke steps onto the landing. "There's no way that's my baby," I snarl. If it was really mine, Brooke would have played this card a long time ago instead of holding it tight until now. "I doubt it's my dad's either, or you wouldn't be stripping down like a cheap whore in my room."
It's whoever's I say it is,
she says coldly.
Where's your proof? I don't need proof. It's my word against yours, and by the time any paternity tests arrive, I'll already have a ring on my finger.
Good luck with that. She grabs my arm when I try to brush past her.
I don't need luck. I have you.
No, you never had me. I shake her grip off. I'm leaving to find Ella. You stay here as long as you want, Brooke. I'm done playing your games. Her frosty voice stops me before I can reach my bedroom.
If you get Callum to propose to me, I'll tell everyone the child is his. Don't help me, and everyone will believe the child is yours.
I pause in the doorway. The DNA test will show it's not mine.
Maybe, she chirps. But DNA will show it belongs to a royal. Those tests don't always differentiate between relatives, particularly fathers and sons. It'll be enough to put doubt in Ella's mind. So I'm asking you, Reed, do you want me to tell the world, tell Ella, that you're going to be a daddy? Because I will.
Or you can agree to my terms, and no one will ever know. I hesitate.
Do we have a deal?
I grit my teeth. If I do this, if I sell this... I struggle to find the right word. Idea to my dad on your behalf. You'll leave Ella alone?
Whatever do you mean?
I turn slowly. I mean, you bitch, that none of your bullshit ever touches Ella. You don't speak to her, not even to explain this. I wave my hand at her now clothed body. You smile, you say hi, but no heart-to-hearts. I don't trust this woman, but if I can bargain for Ella... And yes, for me, then I'll do it. Dad's made his rotten bed. He can roll around in that filth again.
Deal. You work on your father, and you and Ella can have your happily ever after.
Brooke laughs as she bends to pick up her shoes.
If you can win her back.
Chapter 2 2 hours later, I'm freaking out. It's past midnight, and Ella isn't back. Would she just come home and yell at me already? I need her to tell me that I'm an asshole who isn't worth her time. I need her in my face spitting fire at me. I need her to scream at me, kick me, punch me. I fucking need her. I check my phone. It's been hours since she left. I punch in her number, but it rings and rings. Another call and I'm shuttled to voicemail. I text, "Where are you?" No response. Dad's worried. I type out the lie, hoping that it gets a response, but my phone remains silent. Maybe she's blocked my number? The thought stings, but it's not totally crazy, so I run inside and go up to my brother's room. Ella can't have blocked us all. Easton's still sleeping, but his phone is charging on his nightstand. I flick it on and type out another message. She likes Easton. She paid off his debt. She'd answer Easton, wouldn't she? Hey, Reed told me something happened. You okay? Nothing. Maybe she parked down the road and is walking on the shore. I pocket my brother's phone in case she decides to contact him and hurry downstairs toward the back patio. The shoreline is completely empty, so I jog down to the Worthington estate, a property 4 houses down. She's not there either. I look around, down the rocky shoreline, out into the ocean, and see nothing. No person, no imprints in the sand, nothing. Frustration gives way to panic as I race back to the house and climb into my Range Rover. Finger on the start button, I rapidly tap my fist against the dashboard. Think. 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 Valerie's. She must be at Valerie's. In less than 10 minutes, I'm idling outside of Val's house, but there's no sign of Ella's sporty blue convertible on the street. Leaving the Rover's engine running, I hop out and hurry up the driveway. Ella's car isn't back there either. I glance at my phone again. No messages. None on Easton's either. The display tells me I have football practice in 20 minutes, which means Ella's expected at the bakery where she works. We usually ride together. Even after she got her car, a gift from my dad, we rode together. Ella said it was because she didn't like to drive. I told her it was dangerous to drive in the morning. We told each other lies. We lied to ourselves because neither of us was willing to admit the truth. We couldn't resist each other. At least that's the way it was for me. From the moment she walked in the door, all big eyes and guarded hope, couldn't keep away. My instincts had screamed at me that she was trouble. My instincts were wrong. She wasn't trouble. I was. Still am. Reed the Destroyer. It'd be a cool nickname if it wasn't my life and hers that I'm taking down. The bakery's parking lot is empty when I arrive. After 5 minutes of non-stop pounding on the door, the owner, Lucy, I think, appears with a frown. "We don't open for another hour," she informs me. I'm Reed Royal, Ella's... what am I? Her boyfriend? Her stepbrother? What? Friend. Hell, I'm not even that. "Is she here? There's a family emergency." "No, she never showed up." Lucy's brow creases with worry. "I called her and she didn't answer. She's such a good employee, I thought maybe she was sick and couldn't call in." My heart sinks. Ella's never missed a day at the bakery, even though it requires her to get up at the ass crack of dawn and work nearly 3 hours before classes start. "Oh, okay. She must be home in bed," I mumble, backing away. "Wait a minute," Lucy calls after me. "What's going on? Does your father know Ella is missing?" "She's not missing, ma'am," I call back, already halfway to my car. "She's at home, like you said, sick, in bed." I peel out of the parking lot and call Coach. "I'm not going to make it to practice. Family emergency," I repeat. I shut out the shouted expletives from Coach Lewis. He winds down after a few minutes. "All right, son, but I expect your ass to be in uniform bright and early tomorrow." "Yes, sir." Back home once again, I find our housekeeper, Sandra, has arrived to make breakfast. "You see Ella?" I ask the plump brunette.
"Can't say that I have."
Sandra checks the clock.
"She's usually gone by now. So are you, for that matter. What's going on? Don't you have practice?"
"Coach had a family emergency," I lie. I'm so damn good at lying. It becomes almost second nature when you hide the truth every hour of every day. Sandra tisks.
"Hope it's nothing too serious."
"Me too," I answer. "Me too." Upstairs, I enter the room I should have checked before racing off. Maybe she crept in while I was trying to find her. But Ella's bedroom is dead silent. Her bed is still made. The desk is spotless. I check her bathroom, which also looks untouched. Ditto with the closet. All her stuff is hanging on matching wooden hangers. Her shoes are lined up in a neat row on the floor. There are unopened boxes and bags still stuffed with clothes that Brooke probably picked out for her. Forcing myself not to feel bad about invading her privacy, I dig through her nightstand. Empty. I flipped her room once, back when I still didn't trust her, and she always kept a book of poetry and a man's watch in the nightstand. The watch was an exact replica of my dad's. Hers had belonged to Dad's best friend Steve, Ella's bio-dad. I pause in the middle of the room and look around. There's nothing here to indicate her presence. Not her phone, not her book, not her... oh, hell no. Her backpack is gone. I tear out of the room and down the hall to Easton's. "East, wake up! East!" I say sharply.
"What?"
he groans.
"Is it time to get up?"
His eyes flicker open and he squints.
"Oh, shit, I'm late for practice. Why aren't you there already?"
He shoots out of bed, but I grab his arm before he can dart off. "We're not going to practice. Coach knows."
"What? Why?"
"Forget that right now. How much was your debt?"
"My what?"
"How much did you owe the bookie?" He blinks at me.
$8,000. Why?"
I do some quick math. "That means Ella's got about 2 G's left, right?"
"Ella?"
He frowns.
"What about her?"
"I think she ran."
"Ran where?"
"Ran away. Ran off," I growl. I shove away from the bed and stalk to the window. "Dad paid her to stay here. Gave her $10,000.
Think about it, East. He had to pay this orphan who was stripping for a living $10,000 to come live with us, and he was probably going to pay that to her every month."
"Why'd she leave?" he asks in confusion, still half asleep. I continue to stare out the window. Once his grogginess wears off, he'll put it together.
"What did you do?"
"Yep, here we go." The floor creaks as he whips around the room. Behind me, I can hear him muttering curses under his breath while he dresses. "Doesn't matter," I say impatiently. Turning back, I give him the rundown of the places I've been. "Where do you think she is?"
"She's got enough for a plane ticket."
"But she's careful with her money. She hasn't spent hardly any of it while she's been here." Easton nods thoughtfully. Then we lock eyes and speak in unison, almost as if we're the twins of the royal household, instead of our brothers, Sawyer and Sebastian. GPS. We call the GPS service Atlantic Aviation owns and that my dad installs in every car he's ever bought. The helpful assistant tells us that the new Audi S5 is parked at the bus station. We're out the door before she even starts to recite the address. She's 17, about this tall. I hold my hand beneath my chin as I describe Ella to the ticket clerk. Blonde hair, blue eyes. Eyes like the Atlantic. Stormy gray, cool blue, fathoms deep. I got lost in that gaze more than once. She left her phone behind. I hold up my cell. We need to get it to her. The ticket clerk clicks her tongue.
Oh, sure. She was in such a hurry to get away. She bought a ticket to Gainesville. Her grandmother died, you know.
Both East and I nod. What time did the bus leave?
Oh, hours ago. She'd be there by now.
The ticket lady shakes her head in dismay.
She was crying like her heart had been broken. You don't see that anymore. Kids caring about old folks like that. It was sweet. Felt terrible for her.
East clenches his fist beside me. Anger radiates off of him in waves. If we were alone, one of those fists would be in my face.
Thanks, ma'am.
No problem, dear.
She dismisses us with a nod. We exit the building and stop at Ella's car. I hold out my hand and Easton slaps her spare keys into my palm. Inside, I find her key fob in the middle console, along with her poetry book and what looks like the title of the car stuck between the pages. In a glove compartment, she'd stashed her phone, which still shows all my unread text messages. She left everything behind. Everything associated with the Royals.
We gotta get to Gainesville, Easton says flatly.
I know.
Are we telling Dad?
Informing Callum Royal means we could take his plane. We'd be there in an hour. Otherwise, it's a 6.5-hour drive.
I don't know.
The urgency to find her has lessened. I know where she is now. I can get to her. I just need to figure out what angle I should take.
What did you do?
My brother demands again. I'm not ready for the wave of hatred he's going to send my way, so I stay quiet.
Reed.
She caught me with Brooke, I say hoarsely. His jaw falls open.
Brooke? Dad's Brooke?
Yes. I force myself to face him.
What the hell? How often have you been with Brooke?
A couple times, I admit.
Not recently, though, and definitely not last night. I didn't touch her, East.
His jaw clenches. He's dying to take a swing at me, but he won't. Not in public. He'd heard the same things from Mom. Keep the royal name clean, boys. It's easy to tear it down, so much harder to build it up.
You should be strung up by your nuts and hung out to dry.
He spits at my feet. If you don't find Ella and bring her back, I'll be the first in line to see it done.
That's fair.
I try to stay calm. No point in getting upset. No point in tipping this car over. No point in roaring, even though I'm dying to open my mouth and release all of my anger and self-loathing into the air.
Fair?
He snorts with disgust.
So you don't give a shit that Ella's in some college town getting groped by drunks?
She's a survivor. I'm sure she's safe. The words sound so ridiculous, I practically gag as they come out. Ella's a gorgeous girl, and she's all by herself. There's no telling what could happen to her.
You want to drive her car back home before we head to Gainesville?
Easton gapes at me.
Well?
I ask impatiently.
Sure, why not?
He rips the key fob from my hand.
I mean, who cares that she's a hot 17-year-old by herself carrying almost $2,000 in cash?
My fingers curl into fists.
It's not like some junkie high on meth is going to look at her and think, there's an easy mark. That 5-foot-something chick who weighs less than my leg isn't going to beat me off.
It's becoming hard to breathe.
And I'm sure every dude she runs into has good intentions. None of them will drag her down a dark alley and run train on her until she's...
Shut the fuck up!
I roar.
Finally!
East throws up his hands.
What do you mean?
I'm practically panting with rage. The pictures Easton painted with his words make me wish I could hulk out and run to Gainesville, destroy everything in my path until I find her.
You've been walking around like she's nothing to you. Maybe you're made of stone, but I like Ella. She was good for us.
His grief is almost tangible.
I know.
The words are wrenched out of me.
I know, goddammit.
My throat tightens to the point of pain.
But we weren't good for her.
Gideon, our older brother, tried to tell me that from the beginning. Stay the hell away from her. She doesn't need our kind of drama. Don't ruin her like I ruined.
What's that supposed to mean? What it sounds like. We're poison, East. Every single one of us. I slept with Dad's girlfriend to get back at him for being a dick to Mom. The twins are involved in shit I don't even want to know about. Your gambling is out of control. Gideon is...
I stop. Kid's living in his own hellhole right now, but that's not something Easton needs to know about.
We're screwed in the head, man. Maybe she's better off without us.
That's not true.
But I think it might be.
We're no good for her. All Ella has ever wanted is to live a normal, regular life. She can't have that in the royal household.
If I wasn't completely selfish, I'd walk away. I'd convince East that the best thing for Ella is to be as far away from us as possible. Instead, I stay quiet and think of what I'm going to say to her when we find her.
Let's go. I have an idea. I pivot and head toward the entrance.
I thought we were going to Gainesville,
East mutters from behind me.
This'll save us the drive.
We make a beeline for the security office where I slip $100 to the rent-a-cop and he gives us access to the camera footage from Gainesville. The guy rewinds the tape to the moment the bus from Bayview pulls in, and my heart seizes up as I scan the passengers. Then it drops to my stomach when I realize that none of those passengers is Ella.
What the hell?
East blurts out as we leave the bus station 10 minutes later.
The ticket lady said Ella was on that bus.
My jaw is so tight I can barely get a word out. Maybe she got off at a different stop. We trudge back to the Rover and slide in.
Now what?
He asks, his eyes narrowed menacingly at me. I rake a hand through my hair. We could drive to every bus station on the route, but I suspect that'd be a wild goose chase. Ella's smart. She's used to running, used to skipping town at a moment's notice and making a new life for herself. She learned it from her mother. Another queasy feeling twists my gut as a thought occurs to me. Is she going to get a job at another strip club? I know Ella will do whatever she needs to do to survive, but the thought of her taking her clothes off for a bunch of skeezy perverts makes my blood boil. I have to find her. If something happened to her because I drove her away, I won't be able to live with myself.
We go home, I announce.
My brother looks startled.
Why?
Dad has an investigator on retainer. He'll be able to find her a lot faster than we will.
Dad's gonna lose his shit.
No kidding. And I'll deal with the fallout the best I can. But right now, finding Ella trumps everything.
Chapter 3. As Easton predicted, Dad is livid when we tell him Ella's missing. I haven't slept in over 24 hours, and I'm exhausted. Too exhausted to face off with him tonight.
Why the hell didn't you call me earlier?
My father booms. He paces the massive living room in the mansion, his $1,000 wingtips slapping the gleaming hardwood floor. We figured we'd find her before it came down to that, I say tersely.
I'm her legal guardian. I should have been informed.
Dad's breathing grows labored.
What did you do, Reed?
His furious gaze bores into me. He's not looking at East or the twins, who are on the couch wearing identical looks of concern. I'm not surprised Dad's decided to lay the blame at my feet. He knows my brothers follow my lead, that the only royal who could have driven Ella away is me. I swallow. Shit. I don't want him to know that Ella and I got involved right under his nose. I want him to focus on finding her, not distract him with the news that his son is hooking up with his new ward.
It wasn't Reed.
Easton's quiet confession shocks the hell out of me. I glance at my brother, but his eyes are on Dad.
I'm the reason she's gone. We had a run-in with my bookie the other night. I owed him some cash, and Ella got spooked. This dude's not the friendliest guy, if you know what I mean.
The vein in Dad's forehead looks like it might burst.
Your bookie? You're mixed up in that shit again?
I'm sorry.
Easton shrugs.
You're sorry? You dragged Ella into one of your messes and scared her so badly that she ran away.
Dad advances on my brother and I immediately step into his path. East made a mistake, I say firmly, avoiding my brother's eyes. I'll thank him later for taking the heat. Right now we need to calm the old man down.
But it's done, over with. All right? We should be concentrating on finding her.
Dad's shoulders drop.
You're right, he nods, his expression hardening. I'll call my PI.
He storms out of the living room without another word, his heavy footsteps echoing in the corridor. A moment later we hear his study door slam shut.
East,
I start. He turns with a deadly look.
I didn't do it for you, I did it for her.
My throat tightens.
I know.
If Dad knew about...
He trails off, warily glancing at the twins, who hadn't said a word during the entire exchange.
It would distract him.
You think the PI will find Ella? Sawyer asks.
Yes, I answer with conviction I don't feel.
If she uses her mom's ID, we can definitely find her, East assures our younger brother. If she figures out how to get a fake ID, his shoulders slump in defeat.
I don't know.
She can't hide forever, Seb says helpfully.
Yeah, she can. She's the most resourceful person I've ever known. If Ella wants to stay hidden, then she will.
My phone buzzes in my pocket. I eagerly grab it, but it's not the person I want to hear from. Bile coats my throat when I see Brooke's name.
A little birdie told me your princess is missing.
Ella? East says hopefully. Brooke. Her name burns my tongue. What does she want?
Nothing, I mutter, just as another message pops up.
Callum must be beside himself. Poor man. He needs someone to comfort him.
I grit my teeth. She ain't subtle, that's for sure. In our mad search for Ella, I haven't allowed myself to think about Brooke's pregnancy and the deal I struck with her last night. Now I can't ignore it, because the messages keep coming.
You have a job to do, Reed. You made a promise.
Answer me, you little prick. You want some baby mama drama? Is that it?
Jesus, I don't need this right now. I choke down my rage and force myself to respond.
Relax, bitch. I'll go talk to him.
What does she want? Easton repeats angrily.
Nothing, I say again. Then I leave him and the twins in the living room and drag myself to my father's study. I don't want to do this. I really, really don't want to do this. I knock on the door.
What is it, Reed?
How did you know it's me? I ask as I push the door open.
Because with Gideon gone, you're the leader of your merry band of brothers.
Dad throws back his tumbler full of scotch while reaching for a refill, and I wonder why I can't get East off the bottle.
I heave a breath.
I think you should call Brooke.
Dad halts in the middle of stoppering the scotch.
Yeah, you heard me, old man, and trust me, I'm as shocked as you are.
When he doesn't respond, I force myself to push forward.
When you bring Ella back, we're gonna need help. We need someone to provide a buffer.
I gag on my next words.
A woman's touch, I guess. Ella was tight with her mom. Maybe if Brooke had been around more before, Ella wouldn't have left.
My father frowns at me.
I thought you hated Brooke.
How many times do you want me to say I'm a dumbass? I stretch a painful smile across my face.
He remains unconvinced.
She wants a ring, and I'm not ready for that.
Thank God. I guess the booze hasn't erased all his good judgment.
You don't have to marry her, just...
I lick my lips. This is effing hard, but I press on because I made this deal. I can't have Brooke telling people that demon spawn is mine.
Just know it's cool if you bring her back.
I get it. We need people to care about, who care about us.
That much is true, at least. Ella's love made me believe that I could be a better person.
That's generous of you, Dad says dryly.
And hell, maybe you're right.
He fingers the full glass.
We'll find her, Reed.
I hope so.
He gives me a tight smile and I back out of the room. As the door is closing, I hear him pick up the phone and say,
Brooke, it's Callum. Got a minute?
I quickly send her a text.
It's done. Don't tell him about the baby. It'll just distract him.
She sends me back a thumbs-up emoji. The thin metal casing bites into my fingers as I clench my phone, fighting back the urge to throw it at the wall.
Chapter 4
Reed!
Valerie Carrington catches up to me on the back lawn, her chin-length hair blowing around in the crisp October wind.
Wait!
I reluctantly stop, turning to find a pair of dark eyes blazing up at me. Val is pixie-sized, but she's a commanding force. We could use someone with her bulldozer approach on our O-line.
I'm late for practice, I mutter.
I don't care.
She crosses her arms.
You need to stop playing games with me. If you don't tell me what's going on with Ella, I swear to God I'm calling the police.
It's been 2 days since Ella took off, and we still have no word from the PI. Dad's been forcing us to go to school as if everything is normal. He told the headmaster that Ella is homesick, which is the same thing I tell Val now.
She's homesick.
Bullshit.
She is.
Then why can't I see her? Why isn't she texting or returning my calls?
It's not like she has cholera. It's the flu. There's a shot for that. And she should still be able to see her friends.
Callum pretty much has her quarantined, I lie.
I don't believe you, she says bluntly. I think something's wrong, like seriously wrong. And if you don't tell me what it is, I'm going to kick you in the balls, Reed Royal.
She's homesick, I repeat. She's got the flu.
Valerie's jaw opens, then closes, then opens again to release an aggravated shriek.
You're such a liar!
She follows up on her threat, lunging forward to knee me in the balls. Agonizing pain shoots through me.
Son of a bitch!
My eyes water as I cut my junk. Valerie stalks off without another word. A loud hoot sounds from behind me. Still gripping my aching nuts, I groan as Wade Carlisle sidles up to me.
What did you do to deserve that? He asks with a grin. Turn her down?
Something like that. He runs a hand through his messy blonde hair. You gonna be able to spot me, or should we go find some ice first?
I can spot you, asshole.
We head for the gym. I hobble, and Wade cackles like an old lady. The gym is reserved for the football team between 3 and 6, which gives me 3 hours to work out until my body and mind completely shut down. And that's exactly what I do. I lift until my arms ache, pushing myself into a state of pure exhaustion. Later that night, I go into Ella's room and lie on her bed. The scent of her skin grows fainter every time I enter. I know that's my fault, too. East popped his head in last night and said the room stunk of me. The house stinks, all right. Brooke has been here every night since Ella took off, her hands on Dad and her eyes on me. From time to time, her palm lingers over her stomach as a warning that if I step out of line, she's going to bust out the pregnancy news. The baby must be Dad's, which means it's my half-brother or sister. But I don't know what to do with that or how to process it, other than that Brooke's here and Ella's not. And that's the perfect symbol for everything that's wrong in my world. The next day is more of the same. I go through the motions, sitting in my classes without hearing a word the teachers say, and then heading for the field to attend afternoon practice. Unfortunately, it's just a walkthrough, so I don't get to hit anyone. Tonight there's a home game against Devlin High, whose offensive line breaks apart like a cheap toy after every snap. I'll get to pummel their quarterback. I'll get to play myself numb. And when I get home, hopefully I'll be too drained to obsess over Ella. Ella once asked me if I fought for money. I don't. I fight because I enjoy it. I like the feel of my fist in someone's face. I don't even mind the pain that blooms when someone else lands a punch. It feels real. But I never needed it. Never really needed anything before she came along. Now I'm finding it hard to breathe without her next to me. I reach the back doors of the building just as a group of guys breeze out. One of them jostles my shoulder, then snaps, "Watch where you're going, Royal." I tense up as I lock my eyes with Daniel Delacorte, the creep who drugged Ella at a party last month. "Nice to see you again, Delacorte," I drawl. "I'm surprised your rapist ass is still at Astor Park."
"You shouldn't be," he sneers.
"After all, they let all kinds of scum in." I don't know whether he's referring to me or Ella. Before I can reply, a girl runs between us, her hands covering her face. Loud, choking sobs momentarily distract both Daniel and me, and we watch as she runs to a white Passat in the student lot and climbs inside. He turns back to me with a smirk.
"Isn't that the twins' girlfriend? What happened? Did they decide they were tired of their beard?"
I swing around and take another glance at the girl, but it's definitely not Lauren Donovan. This one is blonde and willowy. Lauren's a tiny redhead. Turning back, I give Daniel a contemptuous look.
"Don't know what you're talking about.
The twins' relationship with Lauren is screwed up, but it's their business, and I'm not about to hand Delacorte any ammo over my brothers."
"Sure you don't."
His lip curls. "You Royals are sick. The twins sharing, Easton slamming everything that moves, you and your dad dipping your wicks in the same pot. Do you and the old man compare notes about Ella? I bet you do." I clench my fist at my side. Punching this douchebag's lights out might feel good, but his daddy is a district court judge, and I suspect I'd have a harder time buying my way out of an assault charge backed by the Delacortes. Last time I got in a fight at Astor, Dad threatened to ship the twins off to military school. We were able to smooth everything over because a few other kids were willing to swear that the other punk threw the first punch. I don't remember if he did or not,
All I remember is him saying my mom was a drugged-out whore who offed herself to get away from me and my brothers. After that, all I saw was red. Oh, and I heard your daddy got little Orphan Ella pregnant.
Daniel crows, on a roll now.
Callum Royal, pedophile. Bet the board of directors of Atlantic Aviation love hearing that.
You're gonna want to shut your trap, I warn.
I surge toward him, but Wade appears suddenly at my side and yanks me backward.
What you gonna do, hit me?
Daniel taunts.
My dad's a judge, don't you remember? You'll be hauled into juvie so fast your head will spin.
Your dad know that the only way you get any chicks is because you drug them?
Wade shoves Daniel back.
Move on, Delacorte. No one wants you around. Daniel is dumb as rocks because he doesn't listen.
You think he doesn't know? He's bought off chicks before.
Your Ella won't talk either because her mouth is so full of royal dick. Wade's arm shoots out to bar my attack, and if it was only Wade, I would have been able to shrug him off. But two other guys from my team appear and grab Daniel, and even as he's dragged away, he still can't shut up.
Your control over this school is slipping, Royal. You won't be king here much longer.
As if I give a fuck about that.
Get your head straight, Wade warns. We've got a game tonight.
I jerk out of his hold.
That piece of shit tried to rape my girl.
Wade blinks.
Your girl? Wait, you mean your sister?
His jaw drops.
Oh, man, you're macking on your sister?
She's not my sister, I growl.
We're not even remotely related. I push Wade off and watch with narrowed eyes as Daniel gets into his car. I guess the asshole didn't learn his lesson after Ella and a couple of her friends stripped him down and tied him up as revenge for what he did to Ella. Next time we cross paths, he's not getting away that easy. As Coach goes over some last-second changes with Wade, our QB, I methodically wrap one hand with tape and then the other. My pre-game ritual has been the same since I played Pop Warner ball, and usually the routine centers me, narrows my focus to only what's going down on the field. Dress, tape, listen to some beats. Today it's 2 Chainz and Yeezy asking me to bury them next to their hose. Tonight the ritual doesn't work. All I can think about is Ella, alone, hungry, terrorized by men at a strip club or on the street. The scenes Easton described at the bus station keep replaying themselves over and over. Ella violated, Ella crying, Ella needing help and no one there to answer her.
You still with us, Royal?
A sharp bark catches my attention and I look up into the annoyed face of my coach. Across from me, East makes a winding motion with his finger. Time to finish wrapping up and go.
Yes, sir.
We run down the short tunnel and onto the field behind polo playing Gale Hardesty and his horse. It's a miracle none of us have stepped in horseshit during this circus routine. I slap one taped fist into another. Easton joins me.
Let's kill these motherfuckers.
Absolutely.
We're in complete agreement. Neither of us can take out our aggression on one another, but the game here and a fight afterward, maybe both of us can work ourselves into a livable state.
Devlin High wins the toss and elects to receive. Easton and I crack our helmets together and run out on defense.
How much did you pay the refs tonight?
The tight end chirps as I line up across from him. He's a mouthy ass. I can't remember his name. Batinsky? Bettman? Whatever. I'll look at his jersey after I've smashed his ass into the turf on the way to his quarterback. The ball snaps and Easton and I fly into the backfield. The tight end barely touches me, and East and I are there to greet the running back as he gets the handoff. I lower my head and drive my shoulder into his gut. The ball pops loose and the crowd releases a giant roar that extends long enough to let me know that someone from Astor Park is running it deep. A teammate grabs me by my pads and hauls me to my feet as Easton crosses the goal line. I look down at the running back and offer my hand.
Dude, heads up. East and I are in a piss-poor mood and we're going to take it out on you tonight. Might want to spread the word.
The little guy's eyes widen in alarm. Bettman shoulders his way over.
Lucky hit. Next time it'll be your ass on the turf.
I bare my teeth.
Bring it.
If I get enough hits in, maybe I'll be able to push Ella out of my mind for more than 5 seconds. Wade slaps my helmet.
Nice tackle, Royal.
He cheers when East comes off the field.
Going to let the offense on the field, Easton?
Why?
We can't do it all tonight. Besides, heard you might have pulled a groin with a cheerleader from North High.
Wade grins.
She's a gymnast, not a cheerleader. But yeah, if you want to score a few more times, it's good with me.
Over his shoulder, I see Liam Hunter giving us the death glare. He wants as much time in the game as possible. It's his senior year, and he needs the film. Ordinarily, I've got no problem with Hunter, but the way he's staring at me right now makes me want to take a swing at his square jaw. Damn, I need a fight. I slam my helmet into my hand. On the field, Bettman keeps jawing, his mouth working when his blocks don't. I get into his face after one play, but East drags me away.
Save it for after, he warns.
By halftime, we're up by 4 touchdowns, one more by the defense and the other 2 by the offense. Hunter got a couple of highlights for his college recruiting reel after pancaking a few D-line men. We're all supposed to be in good spirits. Coach doesn't even give us a motivational speech. He walks around, delivers a few pats on the head, and then hides himself in his office to tinker with his fantasy lineup, smoke, or jack off. As the guys start chattering about the post-game party and whose pussy they're going to destroy, I pull out my phone.
Fight tonight? I text.
I glance up at East and mouth, "You in?" He nods emphatically. I toss the phone between my hands and wait for a response.
Fight at 11. Doc 10. E in?
E's in. Coach comes out of his office and signals that halftime is over. After the offense scores again, we're told that this will be the last set of downs for the starting squad, which means I have to sit for the rest of the 3rd quarter and all of the 4th. This sucks balls. By the time I line up across from Bettman, the trigger on my temper is about 1 centimeter long. I dig my hand into the artificial turf and test the bounce in my legs.
Hear your new sister is so loose it takes 2 of you royals to fill her.
I snap. Red washes over my eyes and I'm on that jackass before he can pull his hand off the ground. I rip his helmet off and swing with my right fist. The cartilage and bone on his nose gives way. Bettman cries out. I punch him again. A mob of hands hauls me away before I can land another hit. The ref blows a whistle in my face and jerks his thumb over his shoulder.
You're out!
He yells, face redder than a boiled lobster.
Coach screams from the sidelines.
Where's your head, Royal? Where's your fucking head?
My head is securely on my shoulders. No one talks about Ella that way. Back in the empty locker room, I strip down to my jock and sit my bare ass down on a towel in front of my locker. I realize my mistake within seconds. Without the action of the game to distract me, all I can do is obsess over Ella again. I try to push thoughts of her aside by concentrating on the faint whistles and cheers from the field, but eventually images of her creep in until they flash in front of my eyes like a movie trailer. Her arrival at the house looking sexier than any girl had a right to be. Her coming down for Jordan's party wearing the good girl outfit that made me want to tear all her clothes off and bend her over the banister. Her dancing. Damn her dancing. I shoot to my feet and find my way to the showers. Angry, with lust pumping through my body, I wrench the cold water knob on and duck my head under the freezing stream. But that does nothing. The need is relentless. And hell, what's the point of fighting it? I take myself in hand and close my eyes so I can pretend I'm back in Jordan Carrington's house watching Ella move. Her body is sinful. Long legs, tiny waist, and perfect rack. The tinny music from the television transforms into a sultry track when told through the sway of her hips and the grace in her arms. I grip my dick tighter. The image switches from the Carrington house to her room. I remember the taste of her on my tongue, how sweet she was, how her mouth formed this perfect fuckable O when she came for the first time. I don't last long after that. The tension tingles at the base of my spine and I imagine her below me, her shiny, sun-colored hair against my skin, her eyes staring up at me with greedy desire. When my body quiets, the self-loathing returns in full force. I stare at my hand wrapped around myself in the middle of the locker room. If I could sink much deeper, I'd be halfway to China. The release leaves me hollowed out. I turn on the hot water and wash up, but I don't feel clean. I hope the guy I fight tonight is the biggest, meanest asshole in 3 states, and that he lays the hurt on me. The one that Ella should deliver but isn't here to get it done.
Chapter 5.
East and I skip the post-game party and head home to kill an hour before the fight. I'll regain some control and perspective when I'm smashing some dude's face in with my fist down at the docks.
Need to call Claire. East mutters when we walk inside. Want to see if she'll come over later.
Claire?
I wrinkle my forehead. I didn't know you were tapping that again.
Yeah, well, I didn't know you were screwing Brooke. Guess we're even.
He lifts his phone to his ear, dismissing me. His actions sting. East has been icing me out ever since Ella took off. When I get upstairs, my bedroom door is ajar, and a sick sense of deja vu washes over me. Suddenly, I'm transported back to Monday night, when I found Brooke in my bed. I swear to God, if that bitch is playing games with me again, I'm gonna lose my shit. But it's Gideon I find in my room. He's sprawled on my bed, tapping on his phone. When I enter, he greets me with cloudy eyes.
Didn't think you were coming home this weekend, I say carefully.
I texted him on Tuesday to let him know Ella was gone, but every time he tried calling me this week, I pressed the ignore button. I wasn't in the mood to deal with Gid's guilt trips.
You would have liked that, huh?
Don't know what you're talking about. Avoiding his gaze, I strip out of my t-shirt and replace it with a wife beater.
Bullshit! You've been avoiding this conversation since Ella skipped town.
Gideon pushes off the bed and advances on me.
Can't avoid it anymore, little brother.
Look, it's not a big deal, okay? Ella and I are...
were?
Together.
So what?
If it's not a big deal, then why'd you hide it from me? Why'd I have to find out from East? And what the hell were you thinking hooking up with her? We don't need to drag anyone else into our mess.
Your mess!
I interrupt, then regret it instantly, because he flinches as if I hit him.
Right, he mutters. My mess. I guess it was stupid of me to think that my brother might have my back.
I do have your back, you know I do, but Ella has nothing to do with this.
Helplessness jams in my throat.
Our relationship is...
He cuts me off with a harsh laugh.
Your relationship? Well, lucky you, must be nice. I used to have one of those.
I bite back an angry retort. I get that he's miserable, but I'm not the one who put him in the position he's in. He did that all by himself.
You know what I have now? Absolutely nothing.
Gideon looks ready to rip his own hair out as he paces my room.
I'm sorry.
Completely inadequate, but it's all I can say.
You should be. You need to stay away from Ella. She's a good girl and you're messing her up.
The truth of his words burns hotter than his judgmental stare. Guilt is thick in my throat.
Maybe,
I say hoarsely,
but I can't let her go.
Can't?
You mean you won't?
Gideon's face turns red.
Forget Ella!
Impossible.
You're a selfish asshole,
my brother hisses when he sees the refusal in my eyes.
Gid, I had Nella once, too. I had a girl I saw a future with, and I broke her heart. Now she's mad at the world she can't see straight. Is that what you want for Ella? You want to be our dad? Drive someone to kill herself because she's so fucking miserable?
Ahem. We both spin around to find Easton in the doorway. His wary blue eyes shift from me to Gid.
Won't even ask if I'm interrupting, he says, because I see that I am. Won't apologize either.
Gideon's jaw tenses. Give us a minute, East. This doesn't concern you. Our younger brother's cheeks flush. He stalks forward and closes the door.
No way! You two aren't shutting me out. Not anymore.
East jams his finger in the center of Gideon's chest.
I'm sick to death of your secrets and your whispered conversations. Let me guess, Gid. You knew that Reed was doing Brooke.
Gid shrugs. East's bitter gaze flies to me.
What, I wasn't important enough to be in the loop?
I clench my teeth in frustration.
There's no loop. It was a stupid mistake, okay? And since when do you need to know about every chick I hook up with? You trying to live vicariously through my dick or something?
That gets me a fist to the solar plexus. I stumble backward, slamming my shoulder against the edge of the dresser. But I don't strike back. East is practically foaming at the mouth. I've never seen him this pissed off before. The last time he threw a punch at me, we were kids. Arguing over a video game, I think.
Maybe I should give Brooke a call,
East fumes.
Right? Because obviously banging Dad's girlfriend is some kind of sick requirement for getting a VIP pass to the inner circle. If I drop trow for her, you'll have no choice but to let me into the loop, right?
Gideon responds with stony silence. I don't speak either. There's no point. Not when East is in a mood. Running both hands through his hair, he lets out a growl of frustration.
You know what?
Screw you both. Keep your secrets and take him to hell with you. Just don't come crawling to me when you need someone to put out the fire.
He storms out of my bedroom and slams the door so hard it rattles the doorframe. The silence he leaves in his wake is deafening. Gideon looks exhausted. Me? I'm wired. I need a fight. I need to let out the aggression before I hurt someone in this house. Chapter 6. I drag myself out of bed the next morning, my entire body protesting the simple act of moving. I wasn't exactly in top form at the fight last night. Yeah, I had blinding rage on my side, but not enough endurance. I took some hits that make me wince in the light of day. The bruise on the left side of my ribs is already purple and green. I dig around for a loose-fitting t-shirt to hide the injury and pull on a pair of track pants. Downstairs in the kitchen, I find Brooke perched on my father's lap. It's only 9:30 and Dad's got his ever-present tumbler of scotch next to his hand. If I was screwing Brooke, I'd be drinking 24/7 too, I guess. But damn, why doesn't he see her for what she is? Any word from the PI? I ask my father. He gives a curt shake of his head. Nothing yet. I'm just sick to my stomach about all this, Brooke moans. That poor girl all alone out there. She touches my dad's cheek. Darling, you really need to have a talk with Easton about his gambling. Imagine how scary that bookie must have been to spook Ella like that. Brooke meets my eyes over Dad's head and winks at me. This is a fucking nightmare. I busy myself with breakfast. Sandra was up early and there's a pile of French toast in the oven waiting to be devoured, along with a stack of bacon. I pile my plate up and lean against the counter, unwilling to take a seat at the table while the she-devil and my dad are making nice. Dad notices and slides Brooke onto the chair beside him. Come and sit down, Reed. We're not animals. I glare at him. Using Mom's old sayings against me? That's low, I mutter, then regret it when his mouth tightens with hurt. Brooke doesn't look much happier, but that's because she likes to pretend Maria Royal never existed. Any French toast left? Sebastian's voice at the door interrupts whatever Brooke is about to say. Yeah, I'll make you a plate, I offer. Is Sawyer coming down? Not yet, he's on the phone. A smirk dances around the edges of Seb's mouth. Sawyer's probably sexting Lauren, the twins' girlfriend. Daniel's taunts suddenly flit through my mind. You being careful? I ask in a low murmur as I hand Seb his plate. He scowls. What the hell do you care? Word's getting around school is all. I don't want anyone running to Dad with rumors that would get you sent to a boarding school. Because you're so good at keeping your nose clean? Seb mocks. I notice Brooke watching our hushed exchange with deep interest, so I turn my back and lower my voice. Look, I care about you guys, and I don't want to see anything happen, but your little twin switches aren't fooling anyone. Mind your own fucking business. At least we can hang on to the girl we have instead of running her off. The shock must show on my face because Seb chuckles. Yeah, we know it's your fault, not East's. We're not that dumb, and we know about her, too. He discreetly jerks his head toward Brooke. So keep your stupid opinions to yourself. You're just as sick as we are. Seb grabs his plate and stomps out of the kitchen. What was that all about? Dad asks from the table.
Boys will be boys, Brooke chirps. The smile on her face is genuine. She enjoys seeing us fight. She wants us to fight.
I shovel down some French toast, even though my stomach feels full of lead. I don't know if this family is ever going to recover from Mom's death. The vision of her sprawled across her bed, face slack, her eyes cold and unseeing, is always at the back of my mind. With Ella, all the noise in my head quieted. Now everything is falling apart. The house is quiet. I don't see Seb again, or Sawyer, for that matter. I don't want to think about where Gid might be right now. And East is avoiding me. He hasn't answered any of my texts or returned my calls. I have a feeling he might not talk to me again until Ella shows up. Around 9, Wade messages me about a party at Deacon Mills' house. I have no desire to get drunk or be around drunks, so I decline the invite. But I do send a follow-up message. Let me know if E shows up. Can't track him down. Around 11, Wade messages back. Your bro's here. He's wasted. Shit. I shove my feet into a pair of kicks and throw on a long-sleeve shirt. The coastal air is getting chilly now that fall's set in. I wonder how Ella's doing. Is she warm enough? Is she sleeping well?
Does she have food? Is she safe? When I get to Mill's house, it's packed. The entire senior class looks like it's getting lit inside. After 15 minutes of searching